Hello, hello, beloved listeners, and welcome to another hour of Advanced Living Radio. And this is Kenneth the Lesser, and I'm thrilled and delighted to be your host again today. Why? Because here at Advanced Living Radio, we have a goal that we have every week, and that is guided by my daily prayer. Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously experience vibrantly, exquisitely healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. Oh, yeah. Oh, I just love saying that, contemplating that, praying it. It just lifts me up, and each week we reach out to people in the community, our global community, to bring forth some value to you. And before we get into what is going to be inspiring today for sure, let me invite you to go check out our sponsor of our show, AdvancedLiving.com. Check it out. Go there. You will see the comfort technology. We call it a Clark Kent clock with superpowers, because it looks like a stylish digital clock when you plug it in, but the energy that it creates is like having the Dalai Lama show up and meditate in your room. It is a pure harmonizing energy that mitigates electromagnetic pollution and actually raises the healing field of energy wherever it is. So check it out, AdvancedLiving.com. And now, oh boy, yes, we are in for such a treat today. Now, most of you have heard of Helen Keller. What an inspiring woman. One of her books, How I Would Help the World. But behind the scenes, she was inspired by someone that our guest today, wonderful Ray Silverman, is going to share with us. And you want to know, of course, a little bit about, well, who's Ray Silverman? He's coming into your life, so let me tell you a little bit about Ray. You could call him Reverend Dr. Ray Silverman, or just Ray, because he's quite easy and accessible. He serves as a college chaplain and assistant professor of religion at Brynathyn College in Brynathyn, Pennsylvania. He's the editor-reviser of Helen Keller's Lighten My Darkness, and co-authored with his wife, Star, Rise Above It, Spiritual Development Through the Ten Commandments. Boy, doesn't that sound fun? We've heard of the Ten Commandments, but what do you do with them? Okay, and he recently completed a new book based on Helen Keller's spiritual autobiography titled How I Would Help the World, that is brought forward by Swedenborg Foundation Press. And Ray has lectured nationally and internationally on theories of biblical atonement and is currently working on two new books, A Seamless Garment, which is a study of the four Gospels as a continuous narrative, and, I like this, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. the inner world of today's college student. Ah, perfect. And Ray has a PhD in English and Education from the University of Michigan and a master's degree from Wesleyan University. He's a member of the Society for Biblical Literature, the American Academy of Religion, and is a fellow in the Institute for Transforming Undergraduate Education at the University of Delaware. So, folks, my beloved listeners, let us welcome Ray, and we'll learn some things that are going to make our lives better. Hello, Ray.
Hello, Kenneth.
Welcome. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us. And would you please talk a bit about your background and for those of us that may need a little jog or reminder, some of the highlights about Helen Keller?
Yeah, you know, I could do this over 2 weeks, or I could do it in like 2 minutes. I know we only have a 1 hour show, so
exactly.
Please stop me if at any point I seem to be going on too long, or you want to focus me in a particular area, because I know you have a sensitivity to your listeners, having done this for so long, and so I just want this to be as useful as possible. Okay?
You bet.
Okay, good. So, you know, at the moment, as you said, I'm a chaplain at Brynathyn College in Brynathyn, Pennsylvania. Brynathyn College is a college that was founded by people who believed in the writings of Emanuel Swedenborg as the opening of a deeper understanding of Christianity. So I'm the chaplain at the college, and the college has been there since 1877, but it's a small school. We have about 200 students. I was not born in the Swedenborgian faith myself. I was raised as an atheist Jew. My father was an atheist. Actually, I was not atheist. I always believed in God for some reason. And it wasn't until that I ran across the teachings of Emanuel Swedenborg that I found a path that really made sense to me. And everything I ever believed in my heart of hearts about God and how to be a good person came together in Swedenborg's writings. And then, as I began to study more and more of Swedenborg's writings, I discovered that people like Helen Keller also called themselves Swedenborgians. So that attracted me to her writings. And I began to read, I read her book, My Religion, which was actually a tribute to Emanuel Swedenborg. And I couldn't get through a paragraph without weeping. It was so powerful. But the book was scattered and disorganized, and I thought that it needed to be revised and edited. So I did that in 1994. I revised and edited that book. I gave it a new title. The old title was My Religion. But she had also said, I believe that God is in me. As the sun is in the fragrance and color of the flower, the light in my darkness, the voice in my silence. And I thought, light in my darkness, that should be the name for her spiritual autobiography. So that came out in 1994. And now I've gone on for a while. There's a lot of footnotes on what I've said, but that could be an introduction.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, this is wonderful, because as part of the introduction, we're talking about supporting the college students with that writing. Mm-hmm. I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. And to me, one of the key factors in today's world is helping people to reconnect to the Creator and to help them sort through what, in my opinion, has been some possible being like the prodigal son, maybe wandering off astray from the actual principles of God's ever-present love for us. Mm-hmm. Versus things like original sin and kind of being born behind the eight ball.
Yeah, right.
<you know?
laughs> Yeah, we could talk a lot about that original sin concept and, you know, where that is in the culture and what Swedenborg had to say about that. That's a very important one.
Yeah, to me, that's one of the foundational pieces, because if you look at Albert Einstein, who one of his sayings was, I think, one of the most important things that he valued was the idea that you make the assumption that the universe is actually a friendly place.
Mm-hmm.
And to tie right into that, it's hard to make it a friendly place if you're born a sinner.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And so since we don't know for sure what the heck's going on, mm-hmm. it's kind of fun to be able to make some assumptions. We know where the world has come when we think of things as being sinners and
yeah.
And being disconnected from God or having to do all kinds of things to please the people who can connect us to God, like
mm-hmm.
send in your check and donate lavishly, because the more you give, the more God loves you.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen plenty of that.
Yeah,
and,
right. That's
and
right.
The world is really on a terrible precipice. And so what's exciting to me and what I know, you know, listeners want to hear about is what do we do to help ourselves to reconnect
mm-hmm.
to a concept of God and our spirituality that is much more compassionate and loving.
Right.
And I think that you might be able to help us there.
Well, I hope I can. Is this one of those shows where listeners can call in and ask questions?
Yes, we can open the phone lines.
Mm-hmm.
And some people, there's certainly, they may, we don't know. Sometimes we get calls, sometimes we don't.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
So I'm happy to accept those if people want to call in. And while we're waiting for that, please go on and share a bit more as you, for instance, prepared this book of Helen Keller's with your the part of contributing to it and re-editing and revising.
Mm-hmm.
What were you envisioning?
Well, actually, there's an interesting story about how this book came about. And in the back of the book, under acknowledgments, I tell a little story about exactly how it came about. And I'd just like to read those words because I wrote them really clearly. Would you mind if I do that?
Oh, that'd be fine.
This book has become a reality as a result of inspiration that came to a woman named Lori Klein in a dream. Just before a meeting of women from various Swedenborgian denominations in July 2010, Lori had a dream in which a large crowd insisted that we need to help Helen Keller help the world. She knew of an earlier book by that name that had been circulated as a booklet. At the women's meeting, Lori told the dream and asked for help in taking this essay around the world. In the opening paragraph of her essay, Helen writes, "I acknowledge my profound indebtedness to Emanuel Swedenborg for a richer interpretation of the Bible, a deeper understanding of the meaning of Christianity, and a precious sense of the divine presence in the world. I would say the same about my indebtedness to Helen. I have long been drawn to her words and have been moved deeply by her prose poetry. In my opinion, she has fully succeeded in translating the stimulating thoughts and noble sentiments that are buried in Swedenborg's writings into words and phrases that simultaneously touch the mind and move the heart." So, and then I listed some acknowledgments of people who helped out in putting this book together. And it ends with, "I am tremendously grateful for this opportunity to bring Helen Keller's essay, How I Would Help the World, to a wider audience, perhaps to the whole world." So that's part of why I'm so grateful to be on your program tonight. This isn't the whole world, but this is a start. And so thank you for having me on the program.
Oh, you're welcome. Yes, it's just important to be able to reach out and to connect. I know for myself and probably many people that the Emanuel Swedenborg was a new name.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And I don't know, enough about, when he was, the Swedenborg Foundation and different things have been around. Obviously, there's a university that you're at that's dedicated to those teachings.
Right.
It's just apparently relatively small in terms of actually reaching people.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it makes me wonder, because I've spent time in many different religious pursuits, mm-hmm. from Jewish to Roman Catholic to Mormon to Unity Church to Religious Science to some Buddhist and different teachings, all with the idea of seeking a spiritual connection.
Yeah,
and had no idea about the work of Emanuel Swedenborg.
Right. Yeah. Well, it was the same for me. As you mentioned, I studied English in college, and I had come across Swedenborg's name a few times. He's mentioned by people like William Blake, mentioned by Ralph Waldo Emerson, many writers of the 18th century, Thomas Carlyle, Walt Whitman. They all read and loved Swedenborg, and so his name comes up. But I had never read him directly myself. Shall I back up a little bit and tell you the story of how I came across Swedenborg's writings?
Oh, sure.
Okay. Well, I had been through some tough relationships in my life, beginning in my own family where my parents didn't speak to each other. That was a hard relationship. And I remember praying at night, "Dear God, please help Mommy and Daddy become friends." You know, just they didn't talk to each other for like 3 or 4 years. So that was hard, you know,
yeah.
Seeing that growing up. But I had in mind that there could be something wonderful called marriage. And then I got into an early marriage that didn't work out, and that was the most painful thing I had ever gone through. That was, people know how much pain there can be in relationships. But still, I had this hope that maybe there was such a thing as a beautiful marriage that could last forever. And then I met a woman in Denver, Colorado. I was giving a lecture at the University of Denver. And I met her after the lecture, and we fell in love. We just fell in love in a way that I had never imagined possible. And as our love grew, we began to believe that God brought us together and would keep us together forever. So that idea of eternity was very big for me, the idea of a marriage that continued even after you died. I had heard about it in songs. I remember Johnny Mathis would sing "Until the 12th of Never," and there's all kinds of songs about loving you forever. I knew about it in poetry, writers like Elizabeth Barrett Browning, who was also a Swedenborgian, by the way, wrote things like, "How shall I love thee? Let me count the ways. I'll love thee to the length and breadth and depth my soul can reach. And if God so choose, I'll love thee better after death." And so I knew the concept was out there. I knew the eternity of marriage was real. John Lennon even, you know, when he sings, "God bless this love," he knows something about a love that will endure forever. But when it comes to sacred scripture, there were things like in the New Testament that I was aware of. In the resurrection, they are neither married nor given in marriage, but are as the angels. So I thought, I'm going to need to write a book about the eternity of marriage. I just knew in my heart that that was a concept that people needed to know about. And in doing my research, I came across a book by Emanuel Swedenborg. The book is called Conjugal Love. I found it in a library in Wisconsin. I opened up and I read a section where Swedenborg was speaking to a couple that had been married for thousands and thousands of years. It's Swedenborg's testimony that the Lord opened his inner faculties so that he could see into the other world and actually speak with people. And he's speaking with a couple there. And he says to the couple, he says, "You two are one." And the man says, "We are two bodies, but one soul." And I said to my wife, "This is it. This is totally it." And what Swedenborg wrote about, I continued to read that book. It was just marvelous. But I knew that it was very hard to understand. Swedenborg is difficult to understand. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that it would take whole colleges of ordinary scholars to understand him.
Mm.
So my next mission in life was to somehow translate Swedenborg into ordinary language for people to understand. And that leads me to Helen Keller. And This is the quote from Helen Keller that this new book is based on. Are you ready for this one?
Oh, yes.
Helen writes, "Were I but capable of interpreting to others one half of the stimulating thoughts and noble sentiments that are buried in Swedenborg's writings, I should help them more than I am ever likely to in any other way. It would be such a joy to me if I might be the instrument of bringing Swedenborg to a world that is spiritually deaf and blind."
Wow.
Yeah. So what I got from that is that Helen also knew that there was something about Swedenborg that was difficult, that, you know, the stimulating thoughts and noble sentiments were buried in his writings, and that she felt she needed to interpret them for others. And she did. She did a marvelous job. I've never found another writer who can understand what Swedenborg writes and articulate it with such grace and beauty.
Boy, oh boy. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with, for instance, YouTube on the Internet.
I'm not.
Okay. Because as you're saying this, what comes to me, Ray, is that YouTube offers people an opportunity to sit wherever, you know, out under a tree, in a comfortable chair, somewhere, and then to basically videotape.
Mm-hmm.
And so the vision that I just was getting was of you calling forth some of Helen's work about Swedenborg and yours and other people's, so that regular installments, you can upload these videos onto the Internet. There's not a charge to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives people a chance to go there and view it.
Yeah, yeah.
And to be able to, without having to purchase a book, to become aware of something like this.
Right.
And there is, of course, a great searching. When you mention some of the people that you were mentioning, New Thought Churches, Religious Science, the work of Ernest Holmes, Emerson is frequently quoted.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew Fox, some different people, and I'm sure that they were familiar with Emanuel Swedenborg. Somewhere hasn't really come across.
Yeah.
From Emerson stuff or different people, but it's so exciting to become aware of this, and then to think, oh, okay, we want to not just learn about him. But what myself, my listeners crave is what is going to support us to make these things a living part of our lives.
That's a fabulous idea, yeah. You know, when you mentioned YouTube, I thought you said like Princeton's YouTube. I think you said that. Maybe I misunderstood you.
Oh, okay.
And so I wasn't familiar with that particular, but on YouTube, I've put a bunch of stuff on YouTube. I'm very familiar with it, and
it's
very useful, yeah.
Oh, okay. So, and there's a number of things up there. Do they, people like just search on YouTube for name, Ray Silverman, or?
I haven't put any Helen Keller stuff up on YouTube, but I have many other things, and my channel is Ray and Star, one word, Ray and Star.
Okay.
My wife's name is Star.
Yeah. All right.
So, I have about 15 different things on there.
Yeah, because to me, that gives a way for you and other of the Swedenborg community to begin to interact and to connect globally.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that is the way to do it. My daughter was showing me something that had 33 million YouTube hits, and it was just some rap song.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my goodness, you know, my things on there have maybe 300, 400 hits, and this rap song has got 33 million. Nothing against rap songs. I don't want to get into that fundamentalist, you know, dualistic thinking. But it just, it would be nice if some of these more spiritual messages began to get 33 million hits, you know.
Right. Well, to me, when I hear that, it stimulates me to go, okay, let me look at what was the message of that rap song.
Yeah.
Would be one question. And then to be able to say, as Jesus was able to speak in tongues,
mm-hmm.
So that different people of different cultures could understand him.
You're really onto something there, and I think we're together on this, and maybe the listeners also, that God, however we understand him, is speaking to us all the time if we just had the ears to listen, you know, and perhaps right through that rap song. And my daughter was pointing out to me that this is a song about domestic violence, how men abuse women, and this is really powerful, and it may speak to the experience people have had, you know, starting off in love and then winding up in a situation of abuse, and that might be part of the reason that this has gone viral. So I think you're right. I think there's God is never without a witness, you know, and he's maybe witnessing right through us this evening, you know, in some profound way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And so to me, that when you're mentioning that, okay, here's a, you know, the rap lyrics and also the rhythms of rap music,
mm-hmm.
the rhythms of it tend to really get someone's attention and draw them in.
Yeah.
And it was, of course, originally and came out a lot about expressing some real powerful anger.
Right, that's right.
And there was a movie, I think it was called Network, maybe from the 70s, where the people, one of the news anchors on a TV station, just became disillusioned with the process of what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And in a newscast, he gets up and says to people, get up from your chairs and go to your windows or open your door and with the top of your lungs yell, I am not going to take it anymore. I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore.
I remember that, yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
And if you think about the energy of some of the rap music, mm-hmm. and lyrics, to me, I'm mad as hell and not going to take it anymore.
Right.
It certainly is a, you know, is a theme that is expressed with some intensity.
Yeah, that's right.
And so who knows if you would end up becoming the love rapper?
Maybe we'll have to get all this message into a rap song. I noticed the passion and the joy of your initial prayer, and I was thinking, that is true, you know, that if we're going to get through in any way, it's going to be through our passion and our joy, and because that's, you know, certainly an element of God, you know, perhaps the core, you know, we say God is love, but it's passion and joy and exuberance and excitement and as well as peace and contentment, you know, all those beautiful qualities, and it's all God.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And of course, to me, one of the things that I'm finding so important, and I think so many people are reaching for, is in a world with all this uncertainty and this turmoil and this precarious place where people have not paid attention, for instance, wow, let's build nuclear reactors even though we don't know how to handle nuclear waste.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right,
there's a smart move. If you want to destroy the biosphere, it's a smart move.
Yeah.
And so, you know, with this kind of thinking going on, obviously people weren't there taking time to go, this precious gift of life, this
mm-hmm.
precious gift of this planet, what can we do to not only grow and evolve, but to respect where we're at.
Right.
So, you know, they say don't foul your nest, and so the nuclear pollution is just one example where people have strayed away
mm-hmm.
from that place of making sure that respect is a part of the decisions that they make in terms of advancing civilizations.
Mm-hmm.
And so now here it would be wonderful to see how with your work and Helen and Swedenborg that we can be led back
mm-hmm.
to finding this place of connection that is so important to, wow, well, what happens if this whole place becomes radioactive and most of us die?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't sound like fun.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
That to me is that importance of that spiritual connection of
mm-hmm.
You came from God, you're here, and you're still part of God while you're here, and
mm-hmm.
when you're not here, you're going to still continue to be with God because you never left him.
Yeah, I mean, that's that important realization that so many people have, that we are all a part of God, and that God is working through each of us, and every one of us is shaped in a slightly different way to receive God in a different way, and that's our use. You know, what am I called to do? You know, what is my use in this world going to be? And that also is our greatest happiness. So I think that's why the title is so useful, How I Would Help the World, not Should I? It's a foregone conclusion that we're here to help. One of Swedenborg's great statements is, human beings are born to serve. They're born to serve others. We're born for others. And that doesn't mean that we shouldn't love ourselves or that we shouldn't ignore ourselves, but our greatest joy is in being of service to others. In fact, Swedenborg defines heaven as a kingdom of useful service. And I think everybody knows that. They have a gut feeling that when they're really doing what they love and it's of service to themselves and to others, they're in the zone, you might say. You know,
yeah.
They're in heaven, and they don't have to wait till after they die to be there.
Right. Now, one of the things that to me illustrates that thing about born to serve is what I would call it, is if you look at other animal species, wildebeests, elk, there's different ones, and what you notice is that when they're young or born, they are fairly quickly part of the herd and moving along during migration.
Yeah.
The herd doesn't stop and take 3, 5, 10 years to acquaint them with the society and get them up to speed.
Yeah.
They're just on their feet fairly quickly and off they go.
Mm-hmm.
The human infant, on the other hand, oh boy, is it ever there to remind us the importance to serve.
Mm.
Because if we don't, they don't last very long.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, that's a really good point. That's a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah, see, so to me, that was one of the gifts that God gave us in this instrument of our human form.
Yeah.
Is the preciousness of a baby and the fact that the human babies need a lot of care, which is there to remind us that serving and loving is really where it's at.
Oh, that's a beautiful point. Thank you for that one. Yeah, that is really a good
one. Thank you, God, for helping me to bring that out here, Ray. That's my job, you know.
Yeah.
You just pull these different pieces together and put them out in front of folks and go, I hope this helps you.
Yeah. Oh, no, that is really great. And everybody knows, I think, you know, when they've put in a full day of just sitting on the couch, they feel rotten. Yeah. Unless it's a day of resting, you know, and the rest is important so that they can be more useful. I have a friend who has a little mantra that goes TGIM. Not TGIF, not thank God it's Friday. Thank God it's Monday. I get to be useful again. And it's just a very nice thought, you know.
Yeah.
And so now I want to go back to something that you raised earlier. You said this civilization that we have and the threat to the civilization. This essay that I wrote as an introduction to the book How I Would Help the World,
mm-hmm.
the title of the essay is Helen Keller, Seer of a New Civilization. And I was going to call that blind seer of a new civilization, but I assumed everyone knew she was blind. And, you know, there's an ancient, there's something ancient about the idea of the blind seer. If you go all the way back to Homer, for example, there are some people who were blind and yet they saw more clearly than people who are alive
mm-hmm.
and have full sight. So Helen says, the only thing worse than being blind is having sight but no vision. And she really wanted people to have a vision of a civilization, the kind of civilization that you described in your opening prayer, you know, a global loving community. And how are we going to get there? Well, this is one of the reasons I was so passionate about putting this book together. People who know of Helen Keller know about the way she rose above her triple handicap. She was blind, she was deaf, and she had great difficulty speaking. And so, you know, she became a luminous example for all people of the triumph of the spirit over enormous obstacles. And then she went on to raise consciousness about things like women's right to vote, hunger, poverty issues. In fact, she says at one point, I feel like Joan of Arc at times. You know, my whole spirit is lifted up, and I feel like when Jesus said, woe unto those of you who permit the least of these, my little ones, to suffer. You know, she wanted to end world suffering, and she did a great deal on that account. Every time we see a handicapped ramp, we thank Helen Keller, especially Helen Keller, of course, many others, for raising our consciousness about the plight of the handicapped and the possibilities of the handicapped. But there was more, and the more part of the story is what people don't know. Helen had a deeper purpose, and that's her deeper purpose was to raise consciousness, spiritual consciousness. I got this little quote from her that I want to share with you and your listeners. She says this, it is pointed out, and Swedenborg says the same thing, that humanity, unschooled in love and pity, is worse than a beast. It is a hornless, tailless animal. It does not eat grass, but it wantonly destroys with its reckless power of thought. We invent more and more horrible weapons to kill and mar our brothers and sisters in war. We mutilate helpless animals for sport or for the changing whims of fashion. And we have a passion for fault-finding and scandal that rises beyond control. Many other evils are no doubt traceable to human ignorance, but certainly not these pernicious tendencies. Our deliverance is not going to be through self-culture, unaided by right desires. And then she goes on and she says, we know that the international troubles of our time, the hostilities between peoples, the menace of war, are largely due to mental concepts that can be changed only by suggestion, persistence, training, and sheer devotion to humanity. Nations have become so dependent one upon another for the support of life that war is more than ever madness. Well, she goes on, you know, in this way, making a passionate appeal for what we need to do to elevate spiritual consciousness. And that, she felt, would be her greatest work on earth. And then she ends the essay with these words. Actually, this is the end of my introduction, but I'm quoting Helen. There are two ways to look at destiny, one from below and the other from above. In one view, we are being pushed by irresistible forces, obsessed by the fear that war, ignorance, and poverty will never be abolished. But looking up to the clock of truth, I see that man has been civilized only a few minutes, and I rest in the assurance that out of the problems that disturb thinking minds and warm hearts, there shall break the morning star of universal peace. So they have it, you know, Helen's vision, so optimistic and so positive that we're just beginning to understand that we need a spiritual solution to humanity's social problems. And she articulates it with great power and beauty.
noticing here, and by the way, folks, to be able to get this book, would you recommend going to Swedenborg.com, Ray? Or
Yep, Swedenborg.com. That's the Swedenborg Foundation.
Okay, and that's Swedenborg.com.
Yes.
Okay, and now I'm noticing good old page 58 of the book. I'm guessing these pictures are pictures of Helen.
Mm-hmm. Every one is a picture of Helen.
Okay, you didn't just pick people out of the out of the Google pictures and put them in there, did you?
Mm-hmm.
No, I didn't think so. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Bad joke. No, you're going for authenticity. I know.
Yeah.
And folks, if you haven't seen pictures of Helen Keller, because I haven't, and what a precious, beautiful woman she was to look at, as well as for the words that you're hearing. My gosh, to go get this book, you'll be doing yourself a great favor to begin to open up to this level of tenderness and see what you can do to bring some of this more into your life.
She really is a beautiful woman, and people who were in her presence comment that they felt something truly holy around her. They felt that intense love just pouring forth from her, and it's just amazing, just amazing.
Yeah. Now, this quote on page 58 under her picture
mm-hmm.
says in the Bible, "rightly read and interpreted." These are important words there. Rightly read and interpreted is the truest and noblest conception of God possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so what would be interesting is to get some helpful hints on what is meant by this rightly read and interpreted. I don't know if you'd have any examples.
Oh, boy. You know, I can go on for a long time. But, rightly read and interpreted. She loved the Word of God, but she didn't like the way people took it literally and went away with the concept of an angry God who was going to punish us because we had sinned in the Garden of Eden and everyone had inherited that sin. And at some point, God was going to wipe out the human race. But then he sent his son, and the son said that he would take the punishment instead. So God's anger was poured out on the son, and if you believe that, you're saved. That was not Christianity as far as Helen was concerned. That was a distortion of Christianity. Swedenborg presents a very, very beautiful view of Christianity that that Helen embraced. And so There are so many things that are taken literally in Christianity. Like right now, people are waiting for the end of the world, and it doesn't help to be waiting for the end of the world or thinking that God's going to wipe out the world. You know, we should be doing all we can to make this world a beautiful place, to bring the kingdom of God to earth, to have earth be the kingdom of God, and not think that he's going to do this cataclysmic end of the world, judgment day. It just doesn't work like that. So
yeah.
Those are some of the things about learning to read the word rightly. And I could give you several examples. That's the core of Swedenborgian theology. Not throwing the word away, because you just can't take that harsh literalism, or taking it harshly at face value. So there's something in between fundamentalism and totally disregarding the word, and Swedenborg did that. She said he drew apart the veils and showed us the holy of holy, the inner meaning of the word, and he does it beautifully.
Ah, well, that's certainly so very helpful.
Yeah,
as it points out about, look at the fruit of the tree to see what is being produced. And so if we look at, well, what is being produced, if we try to interpret the Bible literally and go with things like we're original sinners and that
mm-hmm.
We're separate from God,
mm-hmm.
Basically if we did a scorecard and said, you know, what's the score so far, and it's like, well, we've got a lot of pain and suffering.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, first of all, it's totally impossible to be separate from God. It would be like saying I'm separate from my heart. I may not be aware that my heart is beating, that's one thing, but I can't be separate from it. And I might not be aware that God is, you know, the very source of my being. I might not be aware of that, but that's not separation. That's just a lack of awareness.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, and I'm not sure if this is part of Swedenborg and Helen Keller's stuff, it appears to be, that the real salvation of humanity will come from that shifting of the concept of being separate from God and having to do something to earn God's favor,
mm-hmm.
Versus always being included in God and always loved.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right.
That's such a foundational turning point for the whole, you know, two different paths, so to speak.
That is, yeah, that's really terrific. Swedenborg, and so this getting back to our idea of being sinners who have fallen from grace and somehow have to get back into God's grace, you know, that idea. Swedenborg teaches that going back to the Garden of Eden, and this is, again, going back to your statement under Helen's picture, that in the Word of God, rightly read and understood, is the highest, noblest conception of God and humanity possible. So if you go back to the Garden of Eden, what was that all about? What was that tree of the knowledge of good and evil that we were not supposed to eat of? You know, what was the tree of life? Swedenborg says that the tree of the knowledge of good and evil is the appearance that life is from yourself. Now, that would be separation from God in an awareness kind of thing. You would not be aware that God is the very source of your life. And this is true in Hinduism. Any great religion will remind us that that the source of our existence is God or Atman or Brahman, and we can never get away from it because it's who we are. And it's a beautiful thing. Every one of us is totally, completely, fundamentally adequate right now. It's not like we're going to be more adequate or super adequate. We have everything we will ever need right now. You know, all the compassion, all the courage, all the justice, all the mercy, all the kindness. It's all there waiting to be accessed and come forward.
Right. And wouldn't it be kind of fun? I was just thinking, for instance, in driving a vehicle, that it needs oil. And so you can pull out a dipstick and see, is there enough oil in the crankcase of the car? Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a little low. We need to put more in. Well, if we had some kind of a gauge on people as to how much God was in them, we'd find that we're always on full.
Oh, that's really good. We are always on full. That is really true. I love it. It's a great metaphor, yeah. We are always, and when you realize that, then everything else is external. You know, all of our shifting moods, our times of disappointment, our upset, our grief and anger, whatever that is, these are wounds. But they're not wounds unto death. There's a place in us that is invulnerable, and that's our God place.
Yes.
When my wife and I did the book Rise Above It, Spiritual Development through the Ten Commandments, that's also based on one of Swedenborg's principles that everyone in every faith tradition can be saved as long as there's a belief in God or a higher power, and a life according to the commandments. And the commandments are really simple, you know. You don't steal, you don't lie, you don't covet, you don't commit adultery, you don't murder or spiritually kill people, you honor your father and mother. They're very simple and straightforward. Swedenborg gives deeper and deeper levels to all of those, but they are still the divine container of all spiritual truth. So anyway, we were in an airport in Pittsburgh, and it was a very foggy day in February. It had been rainy for a long time. It was dark, but it was during the day, and the plane took off, went right through the clouds, and as the plane broke through the clouds, we saw that the sun was shining. And I'm sure lots of people have had this experience. But the realization for us was that just as the sun is always shining, God is always present. The dipstick is always reading full, you know. And that's a miraculous change in a person's life when they realize that there's nothing they can do to earn God's favor. You know, everything they need is already present, and now they have to begin to live their life in the fullness of that joy.
Yeah, exactly. And it makes me think for a moment of a Star Trek episode, an old one, where they went to a planet, and it was like Earth, and it was like after World War II. Except this planet that they went to, the story unfolded that the Nazis had won the war.
Mm.
And so the whole planet was the fulfillment of Adolf Hitler's dream.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, ain't that interesting?
Yeah.
And of course, those things are different ways that things play out politically or economically are totally separate from whether God is present or not and how much of God is in us or not.
That is fabulous. In fact, that's related to the bad seed idea, you know, that someone is born with a bad seed and they're going to be criminals, or they're going to be members of some ethnic group that we look down on. But there's no such thing as a bad seed. You know, we all have the divine seed within us. We're all born of God, every single one of us. When in first day of creation, you know, in the beginning of creation, even though it's metaphorical, it's still true. And God made human beings, and He said, "Not it's good." He said, "It's very good." I taught my Rise Above a course in the prisons in Atlanta, maximum security prisons. And I remember telling the men that that we all have these same thoughts and ideas that they have that got them into prison. That's universal. Swedenborg calls it general influx. You know, the worst thoughts can pour into any mind at any time. But we're free to act on it or not. And they chose to act on it. And others act on it, too, and don't get caught. They chose to act on it, and they got caught. But that doesn't make them the criminal element. It doesn't make them any different from anyone else. We're all exactly the same. We all are filled with God's presence. That is so important. And when I told the men that, I could see the light go on in their eyes. Because other people had told them that, well, they were the criminal element. And they had begun to believe that. And when you believe that about yourself, there's no hope to get out of it.
Exactly. And there's a company, CyberVision, that basically put forward programs to help people learn to do different sports very well. Tennis,
mm-hmm.
golf, baseball. And what they did is they went and videotaped people that were at the height of excellence in their profession, and then when they videotaped them doing repetitive things, they edited out all the times that they weren't so good. So in watching a CyberVision movie, all you saw was the best of the best. And you got to bet that people that are involved in criminal activities or unkindness, they didn't watch CyberVision. They watched Hurt Me Vision, and they saw repeated images or heard repeated things or were treated repeatedly in ways that helped them to figure out, oh, this is how you do it.
Yeah,
And yet, as you say, God's always present in either one of those situations. And
mm-hmm.
as humans, it's so beautiful to be given the opportunity to have this freedom to to learn, and of course the freedom to get healthy enough so that we can then make sure that what we're learning helps to foster love and compassion versus the other things that have many people have learned, like separation and denial and all kinds of other stuff. Ooh, that's not fun.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Well, Ray, I'm just so thrilled for getting to spend this time with you. I feel like we could certainly go on and go through many more passages. I just want to encourage my listeners to go to Swedenborg.com and invite them to check out your book of Helen Keller, How I Would Help the World. That would just be so beneficial to them. And I just want to wish you all manner of blessing upon your work and continued success.
Well, thank you very much. Do we have a minute or two to wrap up?
We've actually gone to the end.
Okay. So. All right. Well, maybe this is just the beginning.
Exactly. Hopefully we'll have you on again for another dose of Ray and Helen and Emanuel Swedenborg, because there's a lot more to share.
Well, thank you very much, Kenneth. It's been a joy to be in your presence tonight and to share whatever I can with your listeners. May God bless you, your listeners, and his entire kingdom.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, until we meet again, Ray, my beloved listeners, God bless, and goodbye for now. Let go.